This is the time. This is the place. For what? Inspiration, awareness, and action. Inspiration, our deepest motivation and influence, our life connection. Awareness, bringing life to life, animating our full experiential and self-reflective consciousness, so that we may be able to read the signs and examine our motivations. Why? That we may act with courage and spontaneity, genuine and wholehearted action. Why, again? That we may be instruments of liberty and justice for all. Continuing in this attitude of prayer, mystery of many names, mystery beyond all names, we gather together as many and as one. We wonder, we question, we gather together as community, as a community, as covenant. We promise each other our mutual trust and support to acknowledge the entire range of human experience in this room, in this congregation, in this city, in this universe. We gather together in song, in silence, in exploration, in thought, feeling, and action. We gather together in mystery to examine ourselves and to know ourselves. We gather together gratefully. We pray in the name of everything that is holy, and that is precisely everything. Amen. Many of you know that I'm a yoga practitioner and a teacher. So I invite you with me to join with me right now in some conscious breathing. What we will do is we will practice a mudra too. How many know what a mudra is? It's a hand position. You've seen the pictures of the Christ like this. Each one of these positions has some type of energetic and esoteric meaning, if you want to have one. The mudra that I want us to practice is the one that's called the Mother Mudra, bringing the right hand, the activating, the masculine, if you will, and the left side, the inspiring and motivating intuition, the feminine, if you will, together at the heart center. So join me and let go of that breath. Exhale. And inhale. Again, exhaling. And inhaling. And now bring yourself to a standing position. And if you can and desire to, interlace your thumbs over the head and look up past the thumbs to that great expanse of our ceiling. And breathe, and gently lower your hands to your side, and reach out and greet your neighbor. Thank you. Let us be seated. Now, how do you feel? Change the energy a little bit. I have a practical suggestion for New Year resolution. That's settle into your body every day. Find some activity each day that helps you feel that you reside within a body that's safe and a comfortable haven for your mind and emotions and spirit. If you notice that it doesn't feel quite nurturing and safe, then do something physical. Go rake some leaves, or work in the garden, or take the garbage out, or watch birds. Make love. Walk, run, hike, swim, bike, dance, stretch, hug someone. Do you want to know how to make a difference in someone's life? A friend was telling me the other night over dinner at Mother's Cafe about his recent trip to Egypt. Something interesting happened while on tour of the pyramids. The guide was a Muslim woman, and during the tour she received a phone call, after which she became visibly shaken, at least to my friend, who's very empathetic. No one else on the tour seemed to notice her condition, so my friend politely and privately pulled her aside and spoke with her, asking if she was okay. And the woman replied, "Oh, I received some unpleasant news from my boyfriend." And he said, "Well, would you like to talk about it?" Well, she said, "No." Well, he felt it was relevant and empathetic to comment, "Well, sometimes it helps me to talk instead of holding it in." And she said, "Well, that's how I deal with bad news." He said, "You know how I deal with bad news?" She said, "No." He said, "I cry." And immediately she burst into tears. And relief was quickly forthcoming and clearly evident. You see, he felt, and he supported her to feel, and she felt supported to feel, so she felt, and she expressed. Now let me ask you, did he make a difference in her life? How many of us would have, how could I say it, held space for her to feel and to cry? How many of us feel and cry? I'm here to confess I feel and cry. You see, I'm committed to feeling, but I haven't always been. Not comfortable with feelings, yours or someone else's? I'm president of that club. You see, I grew up in West Texas, where we wear shoes like this, and boys certainly don't cry. And men just seem to die, like my dad. He died when he was 62. I don't ever remember him crying, and I certainly don't ever remember him talking about his feelings. Sitting in therapy for years myself, I would be talking about my life and I'd be feeling something strange and unexplainable. And my therapist would say, "Yes," urging me to feel my feelings. Because you see, I'd become so disconnected from my feelings after all of my conditioning that I couldn't even recognize a feeling. It just came up as something strange and unexplainable. How did this change happen in me? Let's begin with the understanding that we're all collectors. Some collect stamps, and some collect bolo ties, and some collect bird watching journals. You might say that we are collections of habits, and we become identified with those habits. I suppose that's part of what New Year's resolutions are all about. You want to upgrade your habits. Consider the pervasive habit of assigning blame. Now, who does that? Fact is that when we blame others for our condition, we give away our power. That's right. This is done by giving so much of our energy and attention to the perceived source of the issue, rather than freeing our energy and attention to address the issue itself. Claiming power and acting on it is revolutionary. Yet many live lives of quiet desperation because they give their power away. How do we claim our power? What are some of the necessary actions? We might start with asking how we disempower ourselves, and are we even aware that we disempower ourselves? You see, awareness seems to be a key. Awareness is the beginning of change. After all, a lot of people are angry, and they're not aware that they're angry. It's when they make some kind of contact with equanimity that they see the anger that they're expressing. Today I'm going to tell you a story about my life, and in it I get the opportunity to unlearn. Unlearn, you say? Aren't we taught to learn, to acquire, to get a good education, to get a job? Yes, we are, and we do, in order to spend a lifetime learning life's lessons, which seem to me to be a lot about unlearning. We spend so much time and energy trying to change our external circumstances. I'm interested in changing my mother or my father or my spouse or my children or friends or enemies or everybody except us, when in fact it seems that when it comes to change, the only one I hold any sway over changing is me. Do we really know who we are? Do we have any idea where we want to go? Are we familiar with the matters of the heart? And what difference does it make to have faith? What practically is faith? We hold up ideals, be centered and responsible for one's life, while remaining responsibly connected to the broader familial, societal, and global community. Some will ask, what does faith have to do with living life? Could it be that faith is courage and trust? To listen to life? To follow one's true nature? One's authentic guidance? To follow one's heart? And how do we do that? I look at one of the role models for me, the Dalai Lama, and I'm interested to see that his practice of faith calls attention to a broader concern about the overall conditions of humanity, rather than focusing only on the spiritual attainment of the individual. He offers practical guidance to society rather than mystical revelations. He grounds himself in the study of science, frequently warning against the dangers of religious divisions. And he's also vulnerable enough to express his doubts as to the effectiveness of religious practices, such as meditation and prayer. Looking at the problems of the world, war, divisiveness, poverty, injustice, the Dalai Lama finds their roots at the emotional level. He says, "No one in political leadership takes the emotional level seriously. They just look at the actions. But negative actions come out of motivations and out of negative emotions. We have to look at the emotional level." There's much I want to share with you today, standing up here, vulnerable and all. Fact is, like Guy Noir, the intrepid and narcissistic private eye of the radio Prairie Home Companion, I don't know the answers to life's persistent questions. Ask me an apparently simple question like, "Mark, what is it you want?" I notice how challenging it is for me to find the needle of what I want in the midst of the haystack of all of the conditions and questions that I have about the things that I don't want. The East Indians say, "Mark, neti, neti, neti. Not that, not that, not that." Have you noticed that when we focus on what we don't want, we usually get a lot more of what we don't want? We form a habit of being very clear about what we don't want and don't like, and we surround ourselves with those judgments, and it too begins to be a cage that follows us around. It captivates us. And folks, what we give our attention to has got us. The challenge with knowing what we don't want is to get under it and to explore our motivations and to make choices that are authentic and true. Not that and no, well, they're not answers. They're simply clues. They're clues to keep looking, keep moving, to keep breathing. Similarly, we're faced with the challenge of the programming that occupies much of our memory and energies and no longer serves us. Let's make room for new expressions that are useful and, yes, even skillful. Where is that room? What is it that we want? It lies within. When we swing into action without examining our motivations, without awareness, without connecting to the root of our feelings and emotions, we often make things worse. That's because many motivations are negative, coming from shame and blame and guilt and anger and, yes, even a sense of injustice and from beliefs. The message today is that one has to be sure of one's being before swinging into action. Meister Eckhart, the medieval Rhineland mystic, wrote, "It's not by our actions that we will be awakened, but by our being. It's not by what we do, but by what we are that we will be judged." One could say, we see people and things not as they are, but as we are. In the prologue of his summary of theology, the medieval scholar Thomas Aquinas wrote, "About God, we cannot say what it is, but rather what it is not. And so we cannot speak about what it is, but rather how it is not." In another writing, he goes on to explain the three ways of knowing about this God: first in creation, and second in God's actions through history, and third in the highest form of the knowledge of God, the tam quam ignotum, to know God as the unknown. The highest form of talking about God is to know that one does not know. Isn't it interesting that a canonized saint of the Roman Catholic Church comes off sounding like a Zen master? Oh, and his nickname was the dumb ox. To know God as unknown. Not so dumb, of course. Of course, his name refers to the vow of silence that he took after finishing his Summa Theologica. He just couldn't say anything more and wasn't interested in exploring it with words. And I'm sure you can sense my quandary in talking about a subject like faith and living a genuine and authentic life. Sometimes it's difficult to talk about these things. So knowing God or dealing with God as unknowable means it's incomprehensible to the thinking mind. Now that kind of faith causes me to relax in the midst of all the questions rather than focusing on the illusion that I think I can know. A lot of horrible and terrifying things happen in our world because people think that they know. This is a call to recognize our own mystery, the mystery of our highest calling. And it's no wonder that the contemplative branches of many of the major religions call people to a level of meditation and a level of personal examination that allows them to bypass the thoughts, or at least integrate them. Here's the story I want to share with you today. I was lucky enough to receive my father's blessings as a young adult. It was clear that he highly valued me and wanted me to know that I had his approval and his blessing. It was good that he acknowledged me early because, you see, my dad died 21 years ago. And since then, it's been a single-parent family. My mother, in the role of the drill sergeant, she's presented me with as many challenges any rookie would have at boot camp. And I've almost given up on receiving a blessing from her, and I don't give up easily. My mom is almost 80, and in the past year or so, I've expressed my curiosity by asking her for stories that I may listen to and pass on to others. As her firstborn, I've been especially inquisitive about her feelings and experiences leading up to her first pregnancy, labor, and birth. And I've also been fishing for some clues as to family dynamics and energy. You see, Mom and I have had a highly charged relationship, and to be sure, it's a gold mine of insights and motivations. Lying underneath just another kind of mine, more like a mine field. For most of my 50 years of being in relationship with my mom, there's been a relationship of repressed anger, often expressed as condemnation, and it's functioned under the guise of civility and niceties. I'm sure you know the story. Mom suffered a minor stroke in August at her home in Midland, and within a couple of months, I, as her only Texas-based offspring, have made quite a few visits. And what's obvious and somewhat frustrating is after all these years of personal work in therapy and in support groups, there's still this powerful story that's been running about our anger and judgment. So powerful that it's taken center stage in 90% of our interactions. So powerful that I'm sure it's had a major impact on every relationship in my life, especially with women. So powerful that it has affected my own receptivity to love and self-acceptance. So why are things shifting recently? Is it her new fragility or my maturity? Perhaps it's simply because I acknowledge and accept the feelings of anger and sadness, along with the faith practices of self-observation and unlearning. I own that I have given this story about my mother power. And perhaps this is simply about the fact that when we see things and people, we're really taking a look at ourselves. Interesting, Mom has a new motivation in life too. It's showing up as a now or never attitude about doing certain things she's been resisting as a lifelong recluse, like traveling. Within a 2-week period in November, Mom and I traveled to Silver City, New Mexico, in southwestern New Mexico to visit her dear friends of 60 years. And then a week later, we shared Thanksgiving with family. My relationship with my mom has changed, and that seems to have a lot more to do with me than her recent stroke. Through the eyes of Mom's dear friends in New Mexico, I saw her as revered and honored. And this experience greatly inspired me with actions of reverence and honor for her. And what's even more gratifying is that she receives and acknowledges my sincere honor and respect and has told me. What's etched in my memory is beautiful. An aging mother and her adult son walking very carefully, hand in hand, in the El Paso airport. We sat down waiting for the plane, and she told me again the story of the last 48 hours before my delivery. Her expectations, her nervousness, her pain, her numbness, and her joy. With tears and deep affection, we held each other. And then Mom said something totally new, totally unexpected, totally surprising. Something I'd never heard or expected to hear. She told me how proud she was of me and how satisfied and pleased she is that I'm the kind of man I am. Well, let me tell you, that's some kind of blessing. It's not revolutionary for a mother and a son to love each other. What's revolutionary for me is feeling that love. What was disempowering was the story I held on to, which blocked the space for feeling. Feelings require space, spaciousness. My friend held space for the tour guide in Egypt. The tour guide stepped into that space, received, and expressed her feelings. Had I not released the power of the prevailing story that's maximized my awareness and energies over the past 50 plus years, I would not have been able to receive Mom's heartfelt blessing and love. I understand now the value of freeing my emotions and energies. I understand the wisdom of unlearning those patterns. It's interesting to me that as a guy who grew up Roman Catholic and spent a lot of time in devotion and relationship with Jesus Christ, that I have learned probably more about how to be a human being from the studies and relationship with Jesus Christ. And I've learned more about my relationship with the divine from a guy named Albert Einstein. Curious. The scientist. The man of reason. Einstein said, "Our task must be to free ourselves by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures." As Unitarian Universalists, we have ways of expressing what we want rather than what we don't want. And we covenant to affirm and to promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. Our living tradition draws from many sources, including the wisdom of the world's religions, which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life. It's clear that there are many concerns that fill our lives. And my religion has taught me that the meaning of history is still in the making, and that tomorrow is still becoming, and that our destiny is another myth to be co-created. Let me suggest a New Year's resolution. I take responsibility for my emotional state. I am unlearning emotional programming through self-observation. And as emotional programming and non-confrontational passivity and all of these conditions shed their masks and open their eyes to their own pain and their own anger and their own hurt and their own frustration, thereby is opened a love not previously accessed. So here's the application for what we've been addressing today: the responsibility for our emotional health and the effects of our actions provided and motivated by these emotions. This is our lesson in the practice of faith. We can and must learn from self-observation. Are we empowering ourselves or living in emotional reaction to? Are we living examined lives or are we going through the motions? I'm here to encourage you to join me in making the prison break. Let's go over the wall and release ourselves from the cage of our perceptions on projecting out onto others what we project. Let's end the physics of coercion and self-targeting and be plain speaking, plain feeling, and plainly expressed people. I choose a practice of faith that empowers me to declare with every action, I'm no longer interested or invested in having anything damaging happen to anyone. Can you imagine being that free? Can you imagine being free enough to no longer turn the hurt anyone has done to you to an excuse to dehumanize or violate them? Wouldn't it be interesting to be able to say to anyone you have issues with, from the president to the pope to your dearly departed dad, that although I may never have any direct contact with you, that I may not feel like you deserve this from me, I no longer will keep you out of my heart, no matter how difficult that may be. Well, may we awaken to the lessons of the practice of faith, and may we observe the level of consciousness where confusion and hatred exist. May we examine our motivations and act with awareness, that first level of change, and may we vigilantly embody and breathe our love for liberty and justice for all. And by the way, this all may sound like something that you have to do. So I want to remind us of the words again of Meister Eckhart, who said it so beautifully. God is not attained by a process of addition, but by a practice of subtraction. You don't have to do anything to be free. Instead, with the razor's edge of your consciousness, maintain that non-anxious presence in the anxious systems of life by observing your emotional programming through the practices of acknowledgement, awareness, and acceptance. I wish for us all this new year to be free, to get open and stay open for love. And I want to leave you with this thought. It's never too late to be the person you are.